So that music might sound familiar. These voices may not just yet. It is First Take, Your Take here on ESPN Radio, but with a little bit of a different flavor here. Mike Golic Jr. and Chinne Igwumike here with you guys for the next couple of hours. And Chinne, this feels like a nice like practice run. We're going to get ready to go because next week we start this for real. We start Chinne and Golic Jr. 4 to 7 Eastern on ESPN Radio. And I know we've been jacked up about this for a while, so they're finally uncaging us now.
Yes, finally. But I like what you said, the flavor. And I think this is like the remix today because we're warming up. We're getting our shots up just like Dame Dalla, you know what I'm saying? And just getting warm and then going to come for their heads in the fourth.
So exactly.
The fourth starts on the 17th.
Ooh, the fourth starts on the 17th. Cut that. For the promo, get ready to go on that one. And Chinne, it's crazy here right now that we say we're coming in, and we figure we come in after a little bit of time off. I know you've been all over TV. People have already seen you plenty today. Figured, all right, we'd ease back into this. Just kidding, as the entire college football world seems to be falling apart right in front of us right now.
Yeah, like, you know, a couple months ago when we were really excited about teaming up together and getting this opportunity, we're like, hopefully sports will be back, right? And we'll have something to talk about. And now sports is back, and they're trying to get back in another case. And so now I think everything, I guess bubbles are bursting a little bit.
Yes, well, and you know what? That's the crazy part in all this. So we've seen bubbles have been working on all of this one, and now we turn the eye to college football because we've watched the WNBA, the NBA, Premier Lacrosse, like all these different groups that have used these bubble systems so far have very positive results. And as we get ready now to look ahead at college football, it seems like anything but. So we're presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests appear in the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. We're going to talk to Nicole Arbach of the Athletic here in about 10 minutes, who has been as dialed in and as nails on this college football reporting around some of the decisions that are getting ready to be made. And as we saw from a report from the Detroit Free Press earlier today, it seems like one has already been made. The Big Ten, according to those reports, will be postponing its fall college football season, becoming the first Power Five conference to do so. Chinne, we had already seen the MAC as a conference decide to be the first FBS conference to move their season, postpone it from the fall. We'd watch this happen in the SWAC at the FCS level. And so now that we look at this and hear this news from the Big Ten, as you look at this as a former Pac-12 athlete out at Stanford, I was obviously at Notre Dame, who's ACC affiliated now. When you see this news from the Big Ten, what are you feeling about what comes next after this? Can anyone else really justify playing now?
My first gut reaction is that ish is getting real. It's getting real because in principle, you've seen a lot of players step up and speak out and say, we need to be involved in the process because we have our colleagues, our friends, our teachers that all could be at risk if we play without any kind of protocol or uniformed decision. And so now hearing this from the Big Ten, I am not surprised because in this process, there are so many moving parts to pull off a college football season. Now, I think one thing that we all know, we are two, you know, former athletes, even though I am currently on hiatus, press pause for the game. But, you know, in this moment right now, I'm not playing with the WNBA, but I currently play for the Los Angeles Sparks. As athletes, we understand that the number one thing that we want is we want control over our effort in our bodies because sometimes it feels like the system can run amok. You're practicing out there for four hours. You're literally doing the most on your day to day. And so now in the midst of pandemics, you know, coronavirus and then all these social unrest, I think these players know what they're walking into and they want to ensure that what they're walking into is something safe. And I think these universities, including, you know, that most notably as we're talking about the Big Ten, these universities are trying to protect the interests of their players, but they are students and it's student body as a whole. So it's a very, very complicated situation because the leadership is in many different forms, even though, and this is where I have to get real, I feel like a lot of times people think because we talk about the problems, it confuses the idea that we want college football back. That is the number one thing we all want. But I think the operative word is safely. We want college football back safely and without this tremendous leadership structure where everyone can be on the same page. Of course, you're going to see one conference sort of step to the side. I'm from the Pac-12. I talked to a number of Pac-12 athletes the last few weeks, and they were very concerned, as every college student athlete is going to be concerned. But number one here is that there is still an opportunity. There is still hope. We want college football, and I think the players are pushing it on their conferences to create a system that works for as many people as possible safely.
And safely is the key word there, and that is the Straight Talk. Cover all your bases with Straight Talk Wireless. Get the same networks as big carriers, only pay up to 50% less. Get the unlimited plan with 25 gigs of high-speed data, then 2G for just $45 a month, only at Walmart. Saving may vary. See terms and conditions at straighttalk.com. And I think that's the important thing to remember is, as this weird narrative has taken hold that the people that cover these sports don't want it to happen, it couldn't be further from the truth. But just because a group of athletes, and we've seen now, it's been so awesome, and I know you and I both feel this way as people that were in their shoes not too long ago, to see all of these college athletes start to recognize how much power they have when they speak out. Trevor Lawrence, Justin Fields, I mean, these are the two best quarterbacks in Division I Power 5 college football that last night were a part of, late at night, a group of players going to Twitter. We've seen pro leagues, pro unions using this route, the "we want to play" hashtag going through Twitter, and then in that instance getting a lot of support for that, which you and I both looked at as sort of interesting, because we're here and I feel like I've been pretty consistent in saying players deserve a voice in the processes that, like you pointed out, are going to involve their bodies in a lot of this. But what we saw last night was a lot of support that seemed convenient, because all of a sudden it was giving everyone the thing they wanted as fast as they potentially wanted it. See, these players want to play, and so we should just go forward business as usual. But as you pointed out, if you're a player, you still want to play, even if you're a part of the group that said, well, I would like to do that in a safer environment, one where I feel like I have more protection by a third party, like the Pac-12 brought up or the Big Ten brought up in their statement. And so when the players pulled the okey-doke at the end of the night, and Pac-12s and the Pac-12 players group and the Big Ten players group and the We Want to Play players all joined up together and got a part of a big Zoom FaceTime call last night and ironed this out and released a joint statement, I feel like that one's going to catch a lot of those people that were supporting the We Want to Play crowd a little bit off guard, because now they've opened up a big can of worms.
Oh, they really have. And the difference here is what we've seen the last few months, especially as we've had this whole return to play, you know, scenarios. I was a part of it as a member of the executive committee. It is tedious. It is tiresome work. And you need players involved, because the players are the ones that can give you valuable feedback on how this will go and how they'll be able to manage a season that might be the most challenging they've ever faced. Now, in principle, yes, everyone, we want to play. And I think it was a good moment for us to see that hashtag, because the last few months we've been seeing in the headlines have been opt-outs, right? Everyone medically opting out, you get a whole segment, right? Like, we talk about the impact of those players, but now having players saying we want to opt in given these scenarios, that is a beautiful thing. Now, again, it's easier said than done, and I think the players are pushing the process, a process that has been needed to have over the NCAA for a very, very, very long time. So I'm not surprised that this has come together, and it's really come together at the players' insistence, and this is what will create the new age of, I believe, of the NCAA, where players have a stake and a say in everything that they do.
And I think that could be maybe the biggest and potentially only good thing to come out of the situation right now, because, again, we all understand if this happens, and if all likelihood, as we keep hearing indications of what might be to come, happens, it's going to be devastating for people that we know, certainly the athletes that are covered in a lot of this. The ecosystem around college football is going to hurt, and hurt bad in a lot of this one. But it's worth remembering as we go through this, because you pointed out the players are going to try their damnedest to push through this right now. Jim Harbaugh came out with a letter outlining all the things that they're trying to do in an effort to make this season happen in a way that is safe for everyone, that they feel like they've shown can be safe for everybody. It's important to remember what happens next is going to be decided by a group of people that we haven't necessarily heard all that much from yet, and that one would be the university presidents and all this. So I want to play this sound. Ryan McGee from Marty and McGee was on ESPN Radio yesterday, and he talked about reminding everyone who's actually in charge of the ultimate decision being made here.
Division II, Division III, now the MAC, UConn, about half of FCS, what we used to call 1AA, and eventually it'll be basically that entire division. They're already making their spring plans. You know, again, on Marty McGee, we had the Harvard head coach on. They were the first conference to say we're going to play in the spring. And I know that the Ivy League is not the Pac-12 or the Big 12 or the SEC or the ACC or the Big 12 or the Big 10. But at the end of the day, plans are already being made. And, yeah, and that football will not have some of the biggest stars in college football. But fall football is not going to have some of the biggest stars in college football. Kids are already opting out as it is. And so – you know, what I have said all along about all of this is going all the way back to the very beginning when people were like, oh, I can't watch sports without fans. You'll take what you can get, and I'll take what I can get. And if what I can get and if what we can get is a shortened season that's played in the spring, that's still a lot more football than maybe we thought we were going to get.
And where Ryan is right is we will absolutely be taking what we can get as a fan base here. What remains to be seen is what that actually looks like. And so to help us try and figure that picture out, we're delighted to be now to be joined by college football senior writer at The Athletic, Nicole Arbach. And Nicole, thank you so much for joining us today. You have been absolutely nails on all of the chaos that's gone on in the last really, you know, 12, 24 hours in this situation, though we know it's a lot longer than that. I just saw your tweet about what a Big Ten spokesman had to say about their decision in here. So what can you tell us about the latest from that conference as rumors and reports have swirled about their season cancellation?
Yeah, the Big Ten, a spokesperson just texted me and said that no vote has been held by our presidents and chancellors. So there's a report out there from Dan Patrick that there was a vote, that it was 12-2 in favor of postponing the fall season. So, you know, it sounds like the Big Ten has, you know, and again, all signs are pointing that they're going in that direction. But it sounds like, again, some of these procedural steps that need to happen, like a vote from the university presidents to make something final, you know, that has not happened yet.
Now, Nicole, expanding to the bigger picture here, where do you think the NCAA's role in all of this decision-making process comes in? Because we understand that every university president and every conference commissioner has their own constituents. But do you think that they should have a bigger stake in their voice and also determining the outcome? Because right now it's being out of their hands, out of their control, because the players have pushed it. And also these decisions are happening on the universities.
Yeah, I think that this decision was always going to be made for them, essentially. And it's honestly going to be made for the coaches and for athletic directors as well, because, you know, this decision was going to come, you know, because of governors and state health officials and city health officials and university presidents having the final say. And that's why we're talking about the Big Ten vote, that they're the ones casting those votes. So ultimately, it was always going to be a thing that was going to happen to the coaches and to their players, and they would have to just deal with it. But I do think it's been good to get the player perspective in all of this, because as you guys know, there is no players union. So they haven't had they haven't had legal representation. They haven't had a seat at the table for these decisions, for all of this, for all of the return to play models, the health and safety protocols, what the season was going to look like, the amount of games, all of those things that in the NBA and Major League Baseball and all the pro sports, their unions negotiated that and they had a say in all of that. That didn't happen in college sports. So I know it's the 11th hour, it's a Hail Mary, you know, with these players trying to get their messaging out and get their voices heard. But I am glad that they're realizing that it was missing through all of this.
Talking to Nicole Arbach of The Athletic with us here on First Take, your take on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, and SiriusXM Channel 80. Mike Golic Jr. and Shanae Agwumike here with you guys. And Nicole, in looking at how we got there to the point where there isn't uniformity in the Power Five, there isn't the group working together, how big of a role did the Big Ten releasing their schedule first, deciding to go conference only first and all this, play in that lack of uniformity or lack of working together from those Power Five groups?
Yeah, it was interesting because, you know, I had wondered all along, even before the Big Ten split off to go conference only first, you know, if this sense of unity and togetherness was actually going to stick all the way through, because, you know, they were saying that back in March when they had made basketball decisions and spring sport decisions, like they had to operate independently because they weren't having daily phone calls with the Power Five commissioners. And now they are. But ultimately, that still doesn't mean that you're going to make all these decisions together as if it was one, you know, giant monolith, like one, you know, mega conference that has all of these schools. So I think you've always had that as a backdrop here, that when push comes to shove, leagues were going to make decisions that were in their own best interest and potentially move at different timelines and different schedules. But I think also when the Big Ten went conference only, and, you know, there was some pushback and some people complaining in, you know, the SEC, Big 12, other leagues, that they didn't know that was coming that day, right? That they felt blindsided by it. They felt like the Big Ten made a decision before they needed to, and things of that nature. So that, you know, again, when you're talking about, okay, then are you going to come together and work together to make an even bigger decision together after one of the leagues has already, you know, went out on its own to make a call, which obviously the Pac-12 was ready to make the decision too. They went the day after. But to, again, have that kind of crack in this togetherness, in this unity, you know, I'm told that that is a factor as well as why, you know, again, this decision is going to be dominoes. It's going to be individual conferences because, you know, when you go out in front, you know, with a new commissioner in Kevin Warren in the Big Ten, and you make a decision on your own, it, and this makes total sense. It's hard to expect, you know, on the back end that, you know, everyone would immediately then, you know, want to work all together when you've already shown you're going to do what's best interest for your schools, your presidents, your ADs. And then everyone kind of operated that way since. So they're still having calls. They're still communicating. But again, I think it was always a long shot and then perhaps even longer after the Big Ten made its conference only decision.
I know it is a long shot, Nicole, but we all sports fans still want a chance. And given the landscape of the last few weeks, the Tides first started with the players in the Pac-12, and now we're waiting decision from the Big Ten. For us college football fans to have a chance to see the season, what are you expecting for football to happen right now?
Well, you know, it's up in the air. And, you know, especially if you're thinking about now you have, you know, the Mid-American Conference shut down on Saturday. You know, if the Big Ten is to go next and potentially the Pac-12, their presidents meet on Tuesday, you know, what does that mean for the other three Power Five leagues? And there would still be a couple of Group of Five leagues still trying to play as well. I think it gets harder and harder. There becomes more and more pressure on those leagues as they continue forward because, you know, you're going to have to try to justify that. You're going to have to say, like, my medical advisory group is recommending something that is counter to what everyone else's is. You've already had Division II and Division III shut down. FCS football is below the 50% threshold, so that's, you know, shut down. And so it becomes very, very hard to make that case, and that's exactly what you would have to do. So, you know, I know the SEC and, you know, and the Big 12, they're pushed back the start of the regular season, which means you push back camp, you're buying yourself time. So you are operating under a little bit of a different timeline than, let's say, the Big Ten, who is trying to open the weekend of September 5th. But, you know, ultimately, a lot of administrators at various levels had told me all along, end of July, first week of August was going to be a go or no-go time frame, and that's where we are right now.
Talking to Nicole Arbach with us again. Writer, college football senior writer at The Athletic here on First Take, Your Take. ESPN Radio is presented by Progressive Insurance. Quoting home insurance just got easier with Progressive's Home Quote Explorer. Quote and buy all online at progressive.com. So, Nicole, before we look at what is to come in the next few days and what you expect to see there, one of the conversations that's been happening a lot around all of this is people looking for where to place blame, or as we scout this situation, where it went wrong and what's really responsible on this. As someone who's digested as much of this process you have and talked to so many people in the know, what ultimately prevented college football season from being a realistic option going into this fall?
Yeah, it's not one just answer. It's not one just thing. It's a number of factors. And I think the first one you've got to start with is for a sport that is not going to happen in the bubble, because you can't, these are unpaid athletes. They're not, and you're playing on college campuses, right? So you're not going to be able to do a true bubble like the NBA and WNBA. What that means is that those environments, those campus communities need to be in a place where their healthcare system is not overwhelmed. It's not, they're able to get tests. They're able to get responses in a reasonable time and results. They're able to, you know, again, move around freely on campus and in the community without expectations of contracting the virus because the positivity rate's so high. So there are a number of things that come into play from a campus community standpoint that are important to think about. And then also, again, when the NCAA put out a chart with its medical guides a few weeks ago, they showed a chart. The country was supposed to be in a better place. There were supposed to be less cases overall. We were supposed to have contained the virus more for those reasons, for about community spread. And think about it this way, too. When you have, you know, the country as a whole struggling with outbreaks in so many places, you've had a number of states impose travel restrictions and 14-day quarantines because they don't want more outbreaks to spread from place to place. And you're talking about a sport that would be traveling and be outside of a bubble. So you're already seeing that baseball struggling with traveling and outside of a bubble. But then you add in this factor of college students and the fact that thousands of regular students were going to be on these campuses as well. And it just got to a point for a lot of administrators and those who aren't there yet will probably get there, that it just becomes something that you're just not comfortable doing.
And we have seen that happen, unfortunately, at a rapid pace now in the last couple of days, and we'll continue to watch how it plays out, and we know we will be hearing whatever news comes most likely from you. Nicole, we appreciate the time, and we appreciate all the information today. Thanks so much.
Absolutely. Anytime. Stay safe, guys.
You can follow her on Twitter, at Nicole Arbach, again, senior writer covering college football for The Athletic on that one. So a lot to process there, a lot to react to from what Nicole brought up there. And an interesting way to look at it now is a year potentially without college football and what effect that might have on the NFL. We will get to that next. But first, we got a word from DraftKings on this one, guys. For this weekend's UFC 252, and we do have live sports still going on this weekend, DraftKings, the leader in one-day fantasy sports, is now offering new users a free shot at $1 million in total prizes. Just pick six fighters, stay under the salary cap, and pile up points for advances, takedowns, and more. Download the DraftKings app now using promo code FITS to get a free shot at $1 million in total prizes for this weekend's UFC 252 contest. That's promo code FITS only at DraftKings. Minimum $5 deposit required. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details. Back after this. It's First Take, Your Take. It's First Take, Your Take here on ESPN Radio, ESPN News, Sirius XM Channel 80. We're presented by Progressive Insurance, and all guests join us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. We'll be heading there in just a second. In the meantime, if you want to tweet us, because this voice may not sound familiar, it is not Jason Fitz here with First Take, Your Take, but rather it is Mike Golic Jr., Chinay Gwumike here with you, giving you guys a little bit of preview of what is to start next week. The new ESPN Radio lineup is getting going, and Chinay and Golic Jr. will be joining you guys from 4 to 7 Eastern every Monday through Friday. I know we're looking forward to that, so in the meantime, if you want to tweet at us, at Mike Golic Jr., at Chinay321, on Twitter. And Chinay, we just talked to Nicole Arbach about a lot of the uncertainty going on around in college sports, and one of the things that we've heard through all of this is the decision-making that's being made right now, being weighed by these athletes, has a lot to do with health and safety. And I wanted to ask you about this because you are a current WNBA player still. You opted not to go into the WNBA bubble this year, and you made that decision because of health and safety for known. So what was your decision-making process like leading up to that, knowing and weighing the things that have been a part of your injury past?
There are a lot of intricacies that go into returning to play. And to me, my situation is quite different. For instance, if I was never injured, I had right knee microfracture surgery and left Achilles surgery. If I was never injured, I would probably have enough time, like my sister's balling in the bubble right now, to be prepared to return to play. So my decision was predicated on my injury history, knowing that I need about 3 months to get ready. And realistically, I had about 3 weeks. So that was the toughest part for me. And I think a lot of different athletes you've seen are opting out for different reasons, but they're all personal, whether it is family that might be a little bit more affected if potentially you have the virus and spread it, or whether it's your injury history. There are certain veterans that are like, you know what, if I want to have an extended career, I don't want to accelerate this return to play. But the number one thing that I like to tell people is we all want to play. And so I think seeing these players come united, and I'm just even looking at the list that the players have put out there through the hashtag, obviously Trevor Lawrence has initiated it. It's clearly all things that we all want and think should be attainable for any person, any athlete that we desire to see to get. I mean, establish universal mandated health and safety procedures and protocols, give players the opportunity to opt out and respect their decision. And that is something I had to deal with. But the problem, the hardest part about this entire process is that it's negotiated over months. Ever since we negotiated our previous CBA, the WNBA CBA, that took about 2 years. We opted out a year and a half, but knew we were opting out a couple months before. So it took years for us to get to a CBA. It took us 5 months to get to returning to play. And now the timeline is so, so crunched. And that is the challenge for all these players, to be able to say, hey, we have a sense of urgency and we should come through together and not just look at this as an individual decision. It's a collective decision for all of us to find a unique way to play.
And I think that's such a great point in here. And again, for anyone that doesn't know, Chinee currently a member of the LA Sparks alongside her sister NECA and all of this. And so went through all of that. And I remember talking to you about that in ESPN Studios and how much planning was going into the conversations around the CBA, your guys' goals. And it's worth noting in this, especially because you're right, all of this that we saw happen last night, the players deserve a ton of credit for. And again, you're talking about Trevor Lawrence, Justin Fields, all of these players coming into this situation and saying, we want to play football this season. We want to establish, like Chinee mentioned, those universal procedures for every conference throughout this league. Give players the opportunity to opt out, guarantee eligibility whether a player chooses to play this season or not, use those voices to establish communication and trust between players and officials, and ultimately create a College Football Players Association with representatives of all of the Power Five. And so I think you hear that and we see that list and we go, yeah, that's great. That's the end game in all this. But then to get it and make it happen, we saw professional leagues that have spent years and have been unionized for years,
yes,
take an entire summer to do this. And so for all the leadership involved, it's been a very difficult thing to watch, as these conversations at the very least should have been happening a long time ago if the player voice was something that mattered. And for more on that, Booger McFarland, our ESPN football analyst, is joining us now on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. And Booger, we've talked so much about college sports, and I've seen you tweeting about college sports in the last day or so here about the ability of the powers that be to listen to amateurs. Do you think there's any shot that we're going to see that happen here as this Hail Mary from the players was thrown last night?
No, I don't. And I truly believe in this hashtag movement that they got going, you know, with we want to play and hear us out and all this good stuff. And it sounds good and it goes viral and you get social media buzzing and everybody's like, good for you, Trevor. Justin Fields, way to go. Guys, but at the end of the day, let's be honest. This revolves around the institutions in the NCAA, the presidents, the chancellors, the people on the highest level. They have to make decisions. And those decisions revolve around one word, and that's liability. And unfortunately, we don't know enough. We don't have concrete enough evidence to say for sure what this virus is going to do, not only short term, but long term. And if you're Michigan, just to pick a school, or Tennessee, better yet, Tennessee has a guard named Trey Smith. He's the number one guard in America. He will be the first guard pick next year in the NFL draft. But here's the issue. He's had a history of blood clots. He's had a long history of dealing with blood ailments, which ultimately blood is pumped by the heart. And if he has a situation where he plays and he catches COVID and something catastrophic happens, the University of Tennessee is going to be liable. And that is something that the president and the chancellor of Tennessee do not want, because liability ultimately comes back to millions, if not billions, of dollars. And I just don't think that the NCAA and their presidents and chancellors want to take a chance by saying, do we roll the dice to play ball so we can make millions now and ultimately risk owing billions of dollars later? I just don't think that's the risk that they're willing to take.
Now, Booger, I know that we all, as one world, are dealing with coronavirus, and that is true adversity that we never expected. But what adversity does show is leadership. How would you compare both the leadership we're witnessing in college football, which looks like it's coming primarily at the players' insistence and possibly university presidents, and also the leadership we're seeing through the trust, I guess, built, even though that trust is a little wavery, from the NFL, especially coming off of their CBA decision? How would you evaluate the state of leadership in college football and how it compares to the NFL as well?
Well, the NFL has leadership because they got a lot of money to pay people. I mean, DeMar Smith makes millions of dollars to head the NFLPA, and the players pay money into the PA to make sure that they can govern and have their best interests. The NFL owners have Roger Goodell and George Atala to sit at the table and negotiate these deals. So this is big boy business in the NFL. You're not talking about millions with an M. You're talking about billions of dollars with a B. So everyone has people representing their vested interest in safety and protocols and in any and everything we do. And then, Chinee, ultimately, here's what it boils down to. When you deal with the NFL, you deal with professional men, professional people that can make decisions, and they are very much aware and mature enough to deal with the consequences. The NCAA kids, the student athletes, are amateur athletes. They do not have anyone representing them because they've always had people to make decisions for them. Think about this, Golic Jr. For years, mom and dad made decisions for you until you were capable of making that decision for yourself. Well, the NCAA has told us that these kids are amateurs. Therefore, I need somebody to make these decisions for me. That's the reason why this movement about We're United, like, oh, this is great for social media and to go viral. But it doesn't matter because they don't have a union. They don't have a union leader. They don't have a director. And ultimately, when you don't have that, there's always going to be dissension among the ranks at some point. And I think that is the biggest difference between the NFL leadership. The NFL leadership is paid. Like, they pay millions of dollars for you to do a job. In college football, they are just – I mean, they're sending out Twitter messages at midnight to try to get leadership, and that's just not how it's done.
And we definitely haven't seen any of that leadership show up from the Power 5 side, from the NCAA side, which is why you've had this outcry going really from top to bottom in the sport. Always awesome, as usual, around here. Booger McFarland, our ESPN football analyst. Boog, we appreciate the time today, man. We'll talk to you soon.
Anytime.
Check out ESPN Audio at Home by telling Alexa to play news from ESPN. ESPN Audio at Home is brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Vans. Drive a Mercedes-Benz van and find out how far an extra mile really goes. From customization and service to financial assistance, Mercedes-Benz Vans are ready for anything. And, Janae, I think what Booger hit on there was why the old system isn't going to work much longer in all this, because if the players don't have a voice in all this the way we heard so many people want them to last night, it's going to be very difficult, because now we've seen, amidst the biggest trial and tribulation, like you mentioned, when the Power 5 leaders and the NCAA leaders and Mark Emmert had a chance, they spit the bit and they kept kicking this can down the street.
Yeah, and the thing that is really interesting to me, besides just the point of us dealing with coronavirus and as athletes still trying to find our voice, you know, even though as professionals we have a voice that we are paid for, which was a great point. To me, the interesting part is there's a whole nother discussion when it comes to social justice. And so just as these athletes are caring about returning to play, they also care about a lot of other issues that matter to them in real time similarly. So seeing the NCAA actually say, guess what? We will allow you to put messages on your jerseys when sports do come back collegiately. That is good. There's a voice there. Now, where's the voice at when it comes to coronavirus? That's the question.
Exactly. And that is the important part to remember for everyone that has spoken up and voiced support for the players and the We Want to Play movement and said, yes, we deserve to have their opinions in this conversation. Make sure you keep that energy when they start asking about their cut of the finances in this situation. Make sure you keep that energy when they bring up social justice, when they bring up talking about Black Lives Mattering, when the large portion of that constituency, especially in college football, is made up of black and brown players and all of this. And so I just wanted to be consistent, because now you're all in it with us. Now you showed your you-know-what last night in saying that I think players should have a voice. So you don't get to open that spigot up just a little bit. It's got to go all the way on that one. So we'll have much more on the We Want to Play movement and what's coming up in college sports as the news flies fast and furious. But coming up next, we also got to do a little grading around here. And what better thing to get to grade than beef? We're going to go grade A top choice beef next here on First Take Your Take on ESPN Radio and ESPN News. It's First Take Your Take here on ESPN Radio, ESPN News, the ESPN app at Sirius XM Channel 80. Mike Golic Jr., Chinay Igwumike here with you guys today. Guests join us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line, and Pennzoil synthetic motor oils are made from natural gas. It gives you unbeatable engine protection. The proof is in the Pennzoil Baseline Sequence Foyer Wear Testing using SAE 5W30. Today, and you mentioned this before, so I'm a little worried now. Are you actually vegan?
Oh, definitely not. I'm from Texas. I'm born and raised in Cypress, Texas. I was just doing it for the culture, for the vegans out there, to make sure that they felt included in our beef discussion.
There we go. Yeah, you know what? Shout out to vegans, first of all. I've dabbled a little bit in your world there, and it's not as bad as people give it credit for in a lot of this. I gotta say, there are some... All right, you know, fair...
My sister has made some great vegan dishes for me, but it's hard.
Yeah, it takes some getting used to in that. And so since we have established that we are a house built on beef, and for anyone that doesn't know, Chinay Igwumike Jr. will be the house on radio that you can join 4 to 7 Eastern every Monday through Friday starting next week on August 17th. And we thought we would start to really get in the mode of what our show is going to be about by doing something that everyone can love. why not grade some beef on this one? So are you ready for this one, Shanae?
Let's do it.
So I got two situations I want to prep for you. One went on in the NBA bubble here. We had a little instance between Damian Lillard and really all the Clippers in this situation. So here is Damian Lillard talking about an end-of-game scenario that led to some heckling on the bench from Patrick Beverley and Paul George with the Clippers. Here was Dame.
After I missed the first one, I heard them over there yelling. I just think that's, to me, that just shows what they expect from me down the stretch. You know, they know what I do. And he saw it firsthand when I was the second-year player when he was in Houston. So I'm sure he has a great memory of that, which is, you know, why that drew that type of reaction from him when he saw me come up short at the end of a game. So to me, that's all that says. Asking me about Patrick Beverley, who I sent him home before at the end of a game. Paul George just got sent home by me last year in the playoffs. So they know that the reason they're reacting like that is because of what they expect from me, which is a sign of respect. And it just shows what I've done at a high clip more times than not. So I'm not offended by it. If anything, it should just tell you how much it hurt them to go through what I put them through in those situations previously.
Where is the lie? Someone please tell me, where is the lie? Why are we going to kick a man when he's down after he lost? Okay, I understand that everyone's been waiting. Like, when you're at the top, people want to see the fall. That's what we love in our culture. We like to see people fall. And yes, we were all surprised that he missed two clutch free throws. But then again, he's made some really big clutch shots, and all it's really revealed is that you're still kind of in your feelings about them. Now, Damian Lillard, I've known for a little while. We're both Team Adidas, and when the pandemic hit, I FaceTimed him really quick, and I was like, hey, how you doing? And this man was locked in. He was like, yo, I got my, you know, big flex. I've got my gym in my house that's getting built. I don't know why I'm changing my voice to Damian Lillard.
I was going to say, does he talk that deep? We just heard him.
Yeah, he got a nice voice. He got a radio voice, so maybe he'll join us too. So he was like, I got my gym in my house, and I'm locked in. Like, I just want a chance. I want a shot. And what he has shown so far is that he's worthy of a shot. Yes, he missed two big shots, but at the same time, guys, like, why would you? I mean, I guess they've been waiting for that moment for a long time to rub it in his face, but he didn't say it in a disrespectful way. He just said facts, and they were in their feelings.
No, but you know it's Pat Bev, too. Like, you have to consider the source and all this, and that man fears no man, beast, or great shot maker.
Yeah, the problem is that you just gave ambition and motivation to the wrong one, because when it comes, he's not going to be motivated just the next game with 51 points. He's going to be motivated if he makes it and slides into the playoffs, beats the Grizz, and then is there, and then somehow you have a showdown. Oh, snap, we want all the smoke, and this man is built to handle it. He been wearing masks for a long time.
That is true. Nobody cared who he was until he put on the mask. We're going to get that. We're going to get an upgraded T.J. Warren and Jimmy Butler beef potentially coming up tonight. And coming up next, we'll give you a little tease of some MLB beef that we saw poorly executed on the field and on the diamond yesterday. And look at how realistic a college football players' union is. That's all coming up next on First Take Your Take here on ESPN Radio.